Though my childhood has long passed, I still treasure memories of the days leading up to Christmas. I knew when the countdown began because this big sign was erected over the entrance to Crawball's hardware store. It was a painted picture of a rosy-cheeked, rotund Santa and one word, just one word, the only word that mattered. You know what that word was? Toys. Now, in the courthouse across the street, the creche was set up on the west lawn. Those were in the days when people didn't mind Christian symbols being slapped down on government turf. Was it like it was back in the 1950s? On the south side of the courthouse was Santa's house. Now, those were the days when Santas were Santas. They sat outside enduring the cold and snow, hearing the children's wishes. And your kid better be sure that he or she wanted to see Santa because you had to bundle him up to get him there. In my opinion, sitting on Santa's lap in a climate-controlled mall has led to what I would call the wussification of Christmas. They don't make Santas and they don't make hardy kids like they used to. I can remember the garland, the green, real, not plastic garland, which spanned Main and Center streets with all the beautiful lights. And right in the center were these two red bells that flashed back and forth, back and forth. That was a wondrous thing to see. And every Christmas we did what probably many of you did. We piled in the car and we went to look at the Christmas lights. Now, we didn't have many lights in our neighborhood. We lived on the north side of the tracks. If you wanted to see the good lights, you had to go out into the east end of town, down Vernon Heights Boulevard, where the wealthy lived. The Boulevardians, as I call them, were the first ones to have those glittering aluminum trees in their front windows, you know, the kind that change color with the rotating wheel, and we oohed and awed as we wove through the neighborhoods, carrying on a friendly debate as to which was the more pretty, the multicolored lights or the solid. And I determined back then, as I remain convinced to this day, that lights of one color are best. Now, I'm just curious to take a poll. How many of you are multicolored people? How many of you are solids? You multicolored people won, but you don't know what looks good. But, you know, the ultimate display at Christmas was on the corner of Unkifer and Mount Vernon Avenues. It was a display that was ahead of its time, and it had to be created by an electrical engineer. There was Santa, the sleigh, and the reindeer, who would flash from one end of the house up on a diagonal to the chimney on the other side. And once Santa reached the zenith, he disappeared, and these words in large letters appeared, flashing from one end to the other. Noel, Noel, Noel. I kind of doubt if that display is still there, but boy, it is seared into my memory. All of those times of Christmas wonder are seared into that memory. You know, from my little vantage point in those days, life could not have been better. Christmas was the assurance that all was right with the world. My Sunday school teachers told me every Sunday that God loved me even more than my parents, and I couldn't imagine two parents that could possibly love me more. I had a winter coat and boots. I was fed 3 squares a day. I slept in a warm bed. Life was good. And that was all that mattered. I had no idea what it meant to live in want. And that is a story that some of you cannot say because your memories of Christmases long ago were pretty slim and meager. But not mine. I lacked for nothing. I'd never seen a starving person. My Uncle Bob served in the Second World War, but the only thing I knew about war was from the glamorized versions from movies. I was unaware of the twisted and malevolent forces in the world that are always working to unravel God's intentions for the world. The only darkness that I ever feared was in my bedroom, lurking inside the closet, hiding underneath of my bed. You know, I enjoy Christmas lights to this day. But am I alone in thinking that the outdoor Christmas decor has kind of gone over the top? I mean, miles and miles of lights are strung from rooftops and gables and around windows and shrubs and trees. And those who think that all of those gaudy lights aren't enough, well, they go out and get themselves those inflatable Santas and snowmen. You know, why all of the lights? Did you ever wonder about that? What's into people putting on these extravagant displays that I heard some people will spend up to $5,000 during the month of December for lights alone? Who does that? And here's my hypothesis. The volume of lights is proportional to the depths of the darkness that we feel and fear. Given the tumultuous conditions of this troubled world, we are uneasy and afraid. We aren't terribly optimistic about the future. And the deeper the darkness, the more we want to put another strand of lights on. The more insecure we feel at the impending and encircling darkness, the more we want to leave the lights on, just like our parents did when we were little, so we wouldn't be afraid of the dark. You know, come Christmas Eve, we are going to tell the story that we can recite in our sleep about Mary and Joseph, the inn at Bethlehem, and the shepherds keeping watch over their flocks by night, and the angel choirs heralding the coming of little Lord Jesus in swaddling clothes nestled in the sweet warm hay. That's Luke 2. But remember last Sunday's lesson from Luke 21. It is nothing like Luke 2. There is no nativity story, and it is about darkness and distress. For Jesus said the days are coming when people will faint from fear, because the things they considered rock solid will be ground into powder. The balance will be upset. Cycles of nature will be altered. It will be 65 degrees in the middle of December. And God's people said, "Thank you, Jesus, for spoiling another swell Sunday morning, ranting about darkness and demise." Years ago, the church I served decided we would do an advertising blitz during Advent. We passed out 1,000 professionally produced glossy colored invitations to join us for Advent and Christmas worship. We even rented a couple of billboards. But as the pamphlets were being distributed in cars by the thousands, by the billboards, it occurred to me that God's first arrival in the world was not broadcast via mailings or billboards, because it came quietly, imperceptibly in this insignificant little hoedown town of Bethlehem, in the presence of a tiny baby that God had made of himself. For 33 years, God walked amid the arid Roman Empire. The last 3 years of his life, Jesus devoted to preaching and teaching and healing, and above all else, making disciples who would continue his way long, long after he was gone. The way, the truth, and the life that came so quietly and so gently would one day be betrayed by his own, die an agonizing, humiliating death, and rise from the dead as unnoticed as when he came. The world at his birth and at his death was as dark a place as you would ever expect to find. Now, there are many in this world today who understand precisely what Jesus is saying. And they do not hear the words as words of discouragement alone, but they can hear them as hope. They live daily with the realities of war and terrorism and famine and suffering brought about by human hatred and depravity, and by the increasingly violent natural disasters. Jesus said there is going to be distress and perplexity among the nations, foreboding at what is going to be happening. And Jesus isn't the only one saying it. If you are listening to the social scientist and the political scientist and the epidemiologist and the climatologist, they're sounding warnings too, while our politicians are saying blatantly outrageous things, making blatantly false statements, all in order to prey upon the fear and exploit the fear that so many of us feel. We're living in a time of darkness when what is false is proclaimed as true, and when what is true is denied as being false or being a grand hoax. In the film Signs, Mel Gibson plays the Reverend Graham Hess. He's a pastor who has quit ministry, and he has renounced his faith because of the senseless death of his wife. Graham is disillusioned and angry at God for allowing her to die and for abandoning him with two small children in darkness and despair. Graham and the two children and his brother are living in a big farmhouse, but they are confronted by another kind of darkness, an even greater one. A crisis not for them, but for the whole world. Because strange lights have appeared over all the major cities of the world. It is the beginning of an alien invasion. The story, however, is not primarily about invading, frightening aliens. It's about holding fast in the face of overwhelming darkness to that which gives us life. Life in even the most bleak of times. As Graham and his brother are watching the startling television images, his brother is coming unglued, and he asks Graham for words of comfort. Graham says there are two kinds of people in the world: those who believe there are no coincidences and that God is watching over every aspect of our lives. And there are those who believe that everything is a coincidence and there is no one to turn to when needed. And the brother asks Graham, "Which one are you?" And in a dark way, he said, "We are all on our own." Now, in this scene you're going to see from Signs, the Hesses are in their boarded up farmhouse. They are spending what may be their last evening together. They are going to eat their last meal, so everyone gets to choose what they want for dinner. The family is seated at the table, and given the peril which they feel, his young son asks his father to pray.
I'll make some sandwiches.
I want spaghetti.
We should eat fast, Bo.
Spaghetti sounds great. What do you want, Morgan?
Anything. French toast. And mashed potatoes.
Now we're talking. How about you, Meryl?
Chicken teriyaki.
Choice. I'm going to have a cheeseburger with bacon. Extra bacon. We aren't saying a prayer. Eat.
I hate you.
That's fine.
You let Mom die.
Morgan. I am not wasting one more minute of my life on prayer. Not one more minute. Understood? Now we are going to enjoy this meal. No one can stop us from enjoying this meal, so enjoy it! Stop crying!
Graham.
Don't yell at her!
All right. Since you're all not gonna eat, I'm gonna try some of everything.
There are only coincidences. If there is no God up above or down below to pray to or to be trusted to help, if all we can finally do is bawl our eyes out and hold on tight to each other, if in fact we are all on our own, then we have nothing. We have nothing to fight with. But we remember those words from John and from Isaiah. The people who walked in darkness have... The people who walked in darkness have, you know it, seen a great light. Those who dwell in a land of deep darkness, on them has light shined. And that's why we remember today is not the final chapter of the story, because when hope is scarce and better days are nowhere in sight, we must have the light, the faith that the light of God will never, ever fail. Never. You know, when it grows dark, Jesus didn't tell us to string Christmas lights from Fort Wayne to Fort Worth. He said, when these things take place, lift up your heads and look, because your redemption is drawing near. You know, only God knows if we are going to be honest as the church and as the world. Be honest that we have made a mess of things and that the trends are sobering, but Advent tells us to trust something more than trends. Like I said, the first Christians heard these words of Jesus and did not slip into paralysis. They did not numb their brains. They took hope. And we can take comfort knowing that we can never take our own projections more than God's promises. The biblical scholar J.B. Phillips said, behind all of our fun and games at Christmas, we should not try to escape the sense of awe, almost a fright at what God has done. We must never allow anything to blind us from what happened in Bethlehem long ago. Nothing can alter the fact that we are a visited planet. You know, I have no idea whether the Earth has been or ever will be visited by aliens, but I know that the man among men who paid Earth a visit, who lived among us full of grace and truth, that he is always there, and by his resurrection, God has staked his claim on this world forever. So what do? You stand up. You stand up. You don't give up. You look up. You look around. You look within. You look beneath the surface. You look to the fellow travelers who are assembled here at your right and left, and know this, that the light of Jesus Christ shines in the darkness. And the darkness has not and will not overcome it. In him was life. And the life was the light of the world. Let's sing.